When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Decibel Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Eric Camino. When we set our clocks back, well, that just gives us an extra hour to rock and roll. Oh, yeah, that's because we are the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, and you know I'm always joined by my good friend, Chris Sinzak.
How's it going?
It's going great. Cool. Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday to you.
Another year closer to death. Yay.
Yeah, it's awesome. When you get to our age, it's like, oh, birthday, wonderful.
Yeah.
Why?
I get to feel older. Yay. No, but thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's cool, man.
It's tough being 29.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, again.
I know it is. Yep. Always.
Yep.
Every year, it's the same.
Yep. I'll never be 30.
Oh, man. So, today.
Yeah, this is a cool one because it kind of came out of the blue.
Yeah. I actually set up an interview. Can you believe it?
You've done a few.
Couple. They usually don't turn out, but I got a good feeling about today.
Yeah, me too.
Like, normally I set up an interview. Things don't work out, and I go, I'm not doing this no more. But this one today, I got a good feeling because we're going to be talking to a guy we both respect quite a bit, a guy that has played in bands with three of the greatest guitar players of all time, George Lynch, Ace Frehley, and Jake E. Lee.
That's right.
It's going to be an interesting conversation today as we break it all down with Anthony Esposito.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So, before we get to all that, you know us. We got to take care of our business. And what's our business? You know that too. It's reviews, reviews, and recommendations. And we got two sweet ones here today. Let's start out with an Apple Podcast review. Look at that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. Yes, and it's entitled A Candle in the Musical Darkness. Foreboding. Let's see what it says. The wasteland of pop music could easily lead one to despair. Before discovering the miracle of podcasts, there were times that I felt I needed a musical support group just to shed the feeling that no one else still worshipped at the altar of guitar, bass, and drums. Then I saw a light in the distant window. I approached the cottage with caution, as being lost in the wilderness of mindless auto-tuned pop can make one mistrustful and paranoid. But when I heard the music inside, I abandoned my fears and flung myself headlong into the joy inside. I stumbled across the sanctuary of Decibel Geek. There were others. The world still had hope. Rock and roll lived. Enough with the theatrics. Great rock and roll, past and present, is still among us, and there are plenty of guides to help you along the journey. Every episode of Decibel Geek brings me something new, whether it's a band that has escaped my attention or details from my favorite music of the past that brings me new appreciation for the art. Thank you, gentlemen. Your work is much appreciated. Keep that flag flying high. The world is listening. Robin the Hood in the Hood.
Yep, Rob shares our episodes on Twitter every week.
From right here in the good old USA, we appreciate that very much. We love Rob.
I was hearing the flugelhorn from the Elder a little bit when you were reading the early part of that review.
Yeah, me too. I was feeling some Elder magic in that.
We've got the light in our eyes.
Of true champions.
We're true champions.
Says so right in our podcast reviews.
Thank you, Rob. Great review.
As hard as that one's going to be to top, we also have a Facebook recommendation. Comes to us from Darren Hunt. Hey, I know Darren.
Yeah, we both do.
We run into him at rock and roll shows here in Nashville quite often.
And I believe he drives down from Kentucky for most of those shows. He's a real road warrior for shows.
And a super
shows.
Cool guy.
Great guy.
Awesome. Let's see what Darren's got to say. He says, I got to give it up to Chris and Aaron. They have a really great show. and I was hesitant to give podcasts a chance, but I finally did, and these guys were my first listen. Oh boy, we broke them in.
Yeah.
I've been a listener for a few years now, and have even branched out to a few other podcasts. But these guys, these are my dudes right here. Consistently great music, consistently great content. They know their stuff. If you haven't checked out the show, you should.
Well, thank you, Darren.
That's awesome. Yeah, Darren's a super cool guy. Always enjoy seeing him whenever we run into him. And, man, what a great review. And what a great feeling to know that we infected his brain with the magic of podcasts.
It's also, it almost comes, feels miraculous sometimes when people we actually know go, hey, I listened to the show. I'm like, finally, thank you.
Well, I suppose we were probably at one of those shows and he heard us talking about it. He's like, oh, I guess these guys seem pretty nice. Maybe I should give them a pity listen. Oh, wait, this is actually pretty fun.
But I still have other friends. I got friends that I grew up with. Haven't listened to the damn show one time.
Yeah.
I don't know what I have to do. I guess they hear enough of my ass when I'm talking in real life.
We've had a lifetime of listening to you talk about Kiss, Chris. We don't want to spend any more time doing it.
But I know one of my friends that I grew up with, I was always the one in our group who would, I would buy Metal Edge.
Yeah.
And I would look at whose tours were being announced, who had albums coming out. And I knew all my friends' favorites, so I was always the guy going, oh, you like Tool. There's a new Tool album coming out on this date.
Nice.
There's a new Tool, you know, new Deftones on this date. I hung out with that crowd at the time.
You were like a human podcast.
I kind of was.
With
so
all the microphones and all that stuff.
It didn't surprise any of my friends that I wound up doing this.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Right on. Yeah, I would imagine about the same for me, too.
But you people that listen are a lot more receptive than they were. Like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
Pass that joint.
We'll get back to you. That's awesome, man. All right. We had a lot of fun last week, too.
We did. That was a great show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was a good time. You know, it was easy for us to do the watch-along. And, man, that video is so awesome. I've been sharing that with all kinds of people that I know are Kiss fans, saying, you got to check this out. And so far, the response from everybody has been, man, thanks for telling me about that. That's super cool.
Yeah, it's... Andrew did an amazing job. I'm looking forward to the next stuff he does. I did also notice that some bastard on Facebook has already ripped it and trying to make it into a bootleg DVD and make money on it. So,
but how can you really do that in this day and age? What are you going to do? Sell it in Antarctica?
I don't know.
They don't have internet?
There's still people that buy them, though. They want them for the collection, and Andrew's going after him. So
hopefully
the guy gets shut down, because that's not right.
No, because Andrew went out of his way to tell all of us, you know, that's exactly what he don't want for it. And so some jerk's going to go ahead and just do it.
Yeah, not
probably
cool.
Just to be a jerk.
So our favorite People Geeks of the Week this week, people on Sharon on Facebook retweeted on Twitter last week's Greatest Show on Earth episode. Geeks of the Week this week are Kristen Schimbeck, Kevin Williams, and Obscuria Podcast, Kevin's new podcast.
Yes.
He's now in the game.
You guys remember Kevin Williams, especially everybody remembers him from the Japanese Visual K show we did together and how awesome he was. Well, now Kevin's doing his very own show, so you got to check it out. It's In Obscuria Podcast. It's on Apple, everywhere else you get your podcasts at. Do yourselves a favor and check it out, because he's just getting started. Get on over, like his page on Facebook, and get in on that. You know Kevin Williams, you love him, and you're going to love his show, too.
And he goes underground on a lot of his song picks.
Yeah?
Way underground. Get the joke.
No.
Kiss Meets a Phantom. All right. Back to Geeks of the Week. Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, Todd Rogers, Cobras and Fire Rock Podcast, Ray Kuhn, Scott Crouch, David Cathy, Brad Schick, Dan Nation, Ken J. West, Nate Atchison, David Glenn, Andrew Scambatti, Greg Troyan, Aaron Baker, Jay Shabluski, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Mike Parnell, Adam Cox, Darren Parkin, Simon Catt, Mikhail Burrell, Mark Alden Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Shane Aber, Otto Erland Gregerson, Christopher Stokes, Andy LaFon, Warren Edward LaRue Baker, Trevor McDougall, CGCM Podcast, Rob Harris, JJ Mack, Tom Smoke, Jeff Taylor, Eladio, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Oh, yeah. Those are our people, our good friends that shared and retweeted last week's episode. You want to become an honorary Geek of the Week? All you got to do is the same thing with our episode here today, our conversation with Anthony Esposito.
Yep.
Share that, retweet it, and you will become an honorary Geek of the Week next week. Real quick thing before we get started, I just want to take a minute, because we haven't really done it here lately, but just remind everybody, we got a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
You can like it. You can get involved in the conversation over there. We've also got VIP. You know,
you can
find your level of commitment on VIP on Patreon and become a Decibel Geek VIP and get all kinds of extra content that the regular listeners aren't getting. Of course, we got Rock and Ron kicking it over there on YouTube with Decibel Geek TV. You know, we got a lot of great friends and a lot of great supporters. Adam Cox on Facebook, keeping things interesting over there. DecibelGeek.com.
Still working on it.
Okay, we're still working on DecibelGeek.com, but we'll get that up and rocking again for you real soon. But, of course, Decibel Geek, you can find us on all the places where you get podcasts. So you're always going to be able to keep up with us one way or another. And, yeah, so show some love and support to Rock and Ron and Adam Cox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just hang tight.
And there are a few of you that listen to the show on the website. And I've been adding the show on Spreaker. So if you go to Spreaker and look up Decibel Geek, you can listen to the new episode there. Most of you do it on your iPod and everything, but if you want to listen to it through a browser, go on Spreaker and check it out there.
We will be there.
Yeah.
We will be there.
Thanks, Paul.
It's going to be awesome. So thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Decibel Geek podcast. And I think I'm ready to be regaled with tales of rock and roll awesomeness. How about you?
Looking forward to it. Let's talk to Anthony Esposito.
Doing?
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on your show.
You up in Pennsylvania today?
Yeah, just doing some stuff around the ranch. There's always something to do. I'm pulling weeds on the side of a hill right now.
Nice. Sounds like a real rock star life.
Yeah, I had to run out and get some 50-to-1 mix for my chainsaw so I could get the job done.
That's very metal.
Well, yeah, very metal.
Well, the guys in Jack will agree with you.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I should get them out here to do some work.
Cut that tree down, Jesse.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so, Aaron got this set up, and thank you, Aaron, for doing it. But, yeah, we're just going to kind of just go bounce around about your career and, you know, whatever you want to talk about.
Sounds great. Sounds like a plan.
Cool.
Awesome. So, I guess start at the very beginning. I mean, where did you grow up? What was your family life like? How did you get into music? You know, where does it all begin for Anthony Esposito?
Adopted only child, adopted in Brooklyn, raised in Staten Island. Musically, got my first bass guitar. Well, I started on the upright and like symphonies and stuff at school. And then I got, into a band in the seventh grade and, just started playing electric bass after that. And, I really didn't listen to metal a lot in the beginning. It was mostly punk rock and jazz for me, when I was starting out, a lot of jazz, a lot of punk rock. Bands like Clash and the Police and the Sex Pistols and the Jam and the Buzzcocks. And then first metal band I ever was in was a little band called Lynch Mob, which is pretty funny because I had to, like, growing up, I really didn't listen to Priest and Maiden and stuff until later, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I think that had a lot to do with as well. The way I play is not really atypical for metal bass guys, you know. But it started on the upright playing in symphonies and stuff, and one thing led to another and one band led to another and brought me to Jake.
Wow. So Lynch Mob's the first metal band you played in. Like, how did your paths cross to where you end up getting that gig?
So I was playing in a couple bands in New York that weren't really, they weren't rock. They were kind of more Police, XTC, kind of like I used to play Fretless and a bunch of stuff in it. So my friend was a model for Steven Sprouse, this fashion designer, and he had asked me to help him put a band together for a fashion show and put this band together called Saved by Sacrifice. It was very Jane's Addiction kind of mixed with punk for the fashion show. And this A&R guy from Atlantic saw me play in that band and he was like, you need to audition for this band. And he had just signed a band to Atlantic. And I auditioned for that band and they had like 90 bass players audition and it was down between me and one other. And they decided to go with the other person over me. It was like basically the only audition I ever did that I didn't get. And it turned out to be good because that band didn't do anything. And the publicist from Atlantic. Well, they had auditioned 90 Days players and picked the one they picked had done other things, and I was just basically starting out. So he had lived in L.A., so they asked me, oh, can you stick around and help us audition drummers? You know, and I was like, yeah, sure. So I helped them audition drummers, and the publicist thought that was really cool. And so she decided to help me out, and she got me a bunch of auditions, and Lynch Bob happened to be one of them. And that's how I got into that band.
Mm, okay.
Was there a big audition process for that? Was there a lot of different guys, or were you pretty much the one brought in and said, hey, this is your dude?
They had a lot of people audition, you know, but as soon as I got it, there weren't any more, you know. Like obviously, once I was there, it was over. Mm-hmm. And it's a funny story. They say you can get anything you want in New York at any time, and I actually got a tape of other people auditioning for bass for the Lynch Mob. So when I got off the plane, they picked me up at the airport and took me to, because they were based in Arizona, they took me to Mick's house, and it was Mick's birthday weekend party. So he had all these bands fly out from L.A., and they're all around the pool and hanging out and getting drunk. And Mick's like, okay, well, here you go. So the way we've been doing it is I'll show you the songs, and then we'll go down, you know, at like 5 or 6 o'clock, and we'll just jam with Oni and George and see how you do. So I'm like, okay, cool. And he's like, I'll show you the songs in like an hour. And, you know, so we're drinking, hanging out. It's his birthday party. And he's like, okay, well, let me show you the songs now. And I'm like, oh, it's okay, man. Let's just, you know, just enjoy your party and don't worry about it. I'm a quick learner. So then another hour goes by. He's like, man, you know, well, let me show you the songs. I'm like, dude, just relax. Don't worry about it. Everything's good. I'm going to be fine. And meanwhile, I know because I already heard the song, so I already knew the song. So anyway, right? So then Mick's like, you know, it's 4 o'clock, 4:30. He's like, man, it's going to be a waste if I don't show you these songs. And we go down there, and I'm going to leave my party, and we're going to go down there, and you're going to completely stink and not know the songs. Let me just show you the changes and stuff. And I'm like, no, don't worry about it, man. I'll learn it on the fly down there. So we go down there and we like start jamming. I think Wicked was one of the songs and Sweet Sister Mercy was one of those songs. And I already knew all the changes. And like we're just playing and they start and I come right in at the right time. And I like do all the next section comes up and I already know what the chord change is. And they look like it was like fate. Like I was just incredible intuition on the progressions and stuff, you know.
Wow.
So I got the gig because I was completely prepared for it, you know.
That's amazing. Well, that's genius.
They're like, what kind of witchcraft is this bass player, you know, exhibiting?
Exactly. Yeah, it was funny. It was really funny. But and then I went to LA and I did a bunch of other auditions, and then I flew back to Lynch Mob in Arizona. And on my way back, they were like, oh, you got to play with us. And you're an equal member, equal split. Everything's split equally. And it's not a salary gig. And that's why I picked them over the other bands that I auditioned for. So
Were there other known bands that you auditioned for?
One of them was Dio. I loved Ronnie. He was great. Mm-hmm. It was like right around Lock Up the Wolves. So when I auditioned for Dio, it was Vinny was playing drums and Rowan was playing guitar. And it was great. And,
yeah.
And Oni's brother had married Wendy Dio, Ronnie's ex-wife. So Ronnie already knew. He's like, you're going to go with Lynch Mob. I know you're going with them anyway. Because him and Oni were talking on the phone or whatever.
Yeah, there's no equal split in Dio, I'm sure.
No, it was a salary gig. And I was only 22 when I did that, you know. Right. I was really young.
Yeah, well, with the guys in Lynch Mob, like, what was the chemistry like early on? I mean, was everybody...
Well, I hated Dokken. I never liked Dokken. I thought George's guitar work and it was great, and I love Mick's drumming, always did. But I never really cared for Don's voice. I never got past it. It was too sweet and syrupy for me. First Lynch Mob tour, we only had one album to draw from, so we did Dokken stuff, you know. So I learned some of that stuff, which was kind of, I tried to kind of play it a little bit. I dug in a little bit more, but I never really dug Dokken. And the whole thing was like what I had said was like, if we're gonna make timeless music, let's have a timeless image. So I was like, let's not really wear the spandex pants with the wrestling sneakers and the cut T-shirts. And like, let's dress timeless if we're going to create something timeless musically, you know, so that we're presenting it the way that it should be, you know? Mm-hmm. So the image of Lynch Mob changed a bit from Dokken, you know, there weren't any matching outfits or whatever.
Yeah.
I suppose that's pretty foresightful because, I mean, it wouldn't be too long after that when that, all of a sudden, that whole scene and that whole fashion that went along with it wasn't really considered that cool anymore.
Yeah, well, we were always lumped in with, like, the Badlands and the King's X and the Cult and that kind of band. We weren't really, like, a hair kind of metal band, you know. But it, had Wicked come out, you know, obviously if it came out 2 years earlier, I mean, we released the same year Nevermind came out, so it was kind of, the world was changing. So.
Yeah. That must have been a crazy thing to live through because it's like the music industry just got turned on its ear almost overnight during that time. I mean, what was it like going through that at the time?
Like I said, I was 22, and I never really was a metal guy anyway. Mm-hmm. So I really, it was all new to me anyway. I was greener than center field in Yankee Stadium on opening day. You know, 22 years old, I was as happy as a pig in shit to be there. And I remember the year that Wicked came out, I got married and we had my son, and it was just like a surreal year for me. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't notice that it was changing that much because I really didn't know what it was like to be in a band when it wasn't changing, you know, like I wasn't in Dokken, so I didn't know, have 10 years of arenas and stadiums under my belt.
And we asked for some questions from listeners, and we got a decent amount of them, so I'm going to read a few of these off. Steve Elliott wanted to know, did you prefer Oni or Robert Mason in Lynch Mob?
I prefer Oni. Yeah. I think Oni... Robert's an incredible singer.
Oh, yeah.
But Oni's more of an artist. Oni's got that vibe to me that I prefer. You know, like, Oni's more of an artist... stylist, like, he's got a vibe, and Robert's a great singer. Mm-hmm. Robert can sing anything, but when you're creating stuff, I think I'd prefer to create with Oni. We're more on the same page, kind of more on the same vibe and mm-hmm. mood, and Robert's a machine, though. Robert can sing consistently anything, night after night. And when he first joined the band, we actually booked a Hell tour. I think it was something like 14 or 18 shows in a row because we wanted to burn him out. And we wanted to see if he can handle it. And the dude got stronger every night. Like, nice. he's a machine.
Yeah.
And he still sings great, you know. But I think if I had a pick, it would definitely be Oni. Oni and I are more on the same page artistically and vibe-wise. And we still keep in touch. Like, I'll talk to Robert like twice or three times a year. I'll talk to Oni probably twice a month, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right on. That's cool.
Well, on the subject of Lynch Mob, there's several people were asking if there's going to be any possible 30th anniversary Wicked Sensation reunion.
No, never. I won't play with George ever again. No. That ship has sailed. I wanted to do something for the 25th, and I had contacted George, and I said, hey, it's 25th anniversary of Wicked. And this was when we were still talking. And I said, you know, let's get the original band. Let's even get the original crew. Let's go in the studio with Max Norman again. Let's make up a follow-up record that we should have made following up Wicked with Max and Oni. Max Norman producing and Oni singing and writing. Let's make the follow-up. Then let's tour the world once as the original lineup, playing all the songs off of Wicked and all the songs off the new album that we just would have done. And let's put it to bed, you know, like, that's it, you know?
It would have been awesome.
And everybody was in. Everybody was like, I'll do it. I'm there. I'm doing it. All our sound guys from back then, our crew guys, everybody's like, oh, we're in. And George was the one that said no. George is the only one that said no. And then stuff after that happened, and so I got no time for it now. I don't want to spend my life with George.
Yeah. Well, did he have any exact reasoning for why he didn't want to do it?
I don't know. I have no idea. Hmm. It was just a no. No is no, you know.
Yeah. So wow. You can't do it without George Lynch.
Well, yeah. You got to have him. Wow.
That's a shame because that would have been really cool. I mean, you talk about a reunion. I mean, you're bringing back the crew and everything. That's a true reunion.
I know. I thought it would have been awesome. It would have been 1990 all over again. Same band, same producer. You know, it would have been great. But he shot it down. So, I don't know. Who knows why?
You know, talking about Max Norman, you know, and he's a very revered producer that did a lot of awesome rock stuff in his career. And I know you're a bit of a producer yourself and have worked with many different producers. How does Max Norman rank with you?
Oh, he's, well, we picked him to mix Patina with the Red Dragon stuff because he had done Fark at the Moon with Jake, and I got the pleasure of working with him when we did Wicked. Go to Jake, hey, what about we bring in Max, you know, to mix? That's our common denominator, you know? And he's like, oh, my God, that would be great. So we had Max come out to the ranch and listen to the songs, how they were progressing. And we hung out, and we actually went to this. I live in this town called Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, which is sort of square in the middle between Harrisburg and Gettysburg and New York and Carlisle. And I took Jake and Max to this biker bar that's a barbecue joint biker bar. And we're sitting there. And we're at the bar, and we ordered, like, ribs and stuff and brisket and, you know, barbecue stuff and beer. We're having beers, and we're just shooting the shit. And then I remember Max went up to go to the bathroom, and Jake got on his phone to call his wife, and he went outside to the parking lot. So I saw it as a great opportunity for me to jump on the jukebox and throw Bark at the Moon on. So I threw Bark at the Moon on, and then Max came back from the bathroom, and Jake came in from the parking lot, and they're just sitting at the bar, and Bark at the Moon's playing, and all these biker guys and women and all this, they're shooting pool and singing along to the song. Little do they know that the guy who wrote it and the guy who produced it is sitting like 5 feet away from them. And, awesome. You know, then the two of them started to talk about it, and, you know, the making of the album and how they came up with it. And, you know, neither of them are happy with the mix on it, but it was just fun being the fly on the wall hearing the two of them talk about that record. Yeah. But yes, I totally love Max. I constantly am in contact with him when I'm producing or something. And I'm like, hey, how did you get that guitar tone on, you know, Diary of a Madman? And what was your mics, and where? How far away were they? And you know, I'm always picking his brain because, and he, you know, he looks at me as like a protege of sorts, and like he's like, all right, try this, and then do that, and you know, and he loves to school me, you know. But yeah, of course, I look up to him. The guy's a legend, and he's still ultra creative and super talented, and he's a great guy, yeah. You know.
And to get on to a little bit of the Red Dragon Cartel stuff, I actually, that the only time I got to meet you was here in Nashville when you guys played at the Basement East, and I did the meet and greet before the show, and I went back and I saw you, and I said I loved your work with Ace Frehley, and you laughed, and you said you should tell him that. I thought that was funny, but
because I got fired, you know, it's like I got fired. I mean, I very rarely get fired. I got fired from that gig and over a case of beer, you know, it's kind of like, I hope he hears it from other people that the lineup that we had when I was there was pretty fierce.
It was a fierce lineup. Well, I caught that show when you guys came and played at the Wild Horse in Nashville. You guys were on money that night, you know, so good, you know, and everybody was into it. I really enjoyed that lineup. You know, the Anomaly album, I always felt like had some great songs on it, but the production seemed a little too shiny, polished for me, you know.
Okay, so we started out Anomaly. It was me and Ace, and Ace was like, I want you to co-write with me. And I'm like, no. I'm like, the more I get involved with the writing, the less is what your fans want to hear. Your fan, you haven't made a solo album in 25 years. I'm like, they want to know where your head's at. They want to know what you're going through right now after this post-reunion disappearing act, and now you're back. And they want to know. The more that I get involved is going to be the less what the fans want. So I'll just be your brain, and I'll be your funnel, and I'll keep track of all your ideas, and then we'll try, this. And he had a bunch of dictaphones from when he was on the Kiss Farewell Tour of guitar ideas and song ideas. So we would, like, I would map them out on a big chalkboard, and I'd be like, oh, this, let's try this pre-chorus with this chorus with this verse. And then me and him would hash them out, and then we brought Anton Stieg in, and the three of us would just jam and get those songs down, right? Mm-hmm. And then we started tracking, and I had worked with this engineer, Jay Messina, who was Jack Douglas's engineer, who he did all, like, the first five Aerosmith records. He did the first Cheap Cheap Trick records. He did John Lennon records. The guy's a phenomenal engineer. And he had cut the New York Dolls record with Jack Douglas in my studio. Mm. So I had a good working relationship with Jay. I called Jay and I'm like, Jay, I don't want to engineer this because I'm playing bass on it. He's like, I'll do it. So we hired Jay. So Jay engineered it. And we did the record, and then I had Thompson and Barbiero mixing the record, the guys who did Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
And it was like Ace was living upstate New York at the time, and right over the Tappan Zee Bridge is where Thompson and Barbiero were, and they'd mix there and all that. Then something happened where Ace changed management. The record got hijacked, and the record got taken to L.A., they added a cover song to it, which I told Ace, I'm like, enough with the fucking cover songs. I'm like, you're such a great songwriter. People don't want to hear you do another fucking cover. You've done enough covers in your life. You're such a great songwriter. Don't be lazy. Write the songs, you know? And he wrote such incredible songs. Like, I used to love watching him come up with stuff. And so the record got hijacked by the new manager, taken to L.A. They added Fox on the Run. And then they had some other guy mix it, and the mix sounds like shit, you know? And, like, I heard the tracks before they got mixed by the guy in L.A., and I'm like, this sounds like shit. I'm like, the record was ripping. It was in your, it was like pain in the neck and all this stuff. And then Foxy and Free somehow was, it used to be called Hard for Me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it got titled Foxy and Free. And then we had a song, an instrumental on it called Skells. And all of a sudden that became Space Bear. And I was like, what the fuck is going on with this record, you know? So it's not as good as it is. It got hijacked, taken to L.A., and ruined.
Oh, man.
Which sucks, because I thought it was incredible. When Thompson and Barbiero were mixing it, the mixes that were coming back, I mean, they had done Tesla. They had done Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
Like, they were great, great mix engineers, you know?
Why would you take it out of those guys' hands?
Right, whose
brilliant idea was it to do this?
You know, as good,
the manager.
Can you imagine, you know, how great that album would have sounded with the guys that did Appetite for Destruction, you know, the guitar.
You could ask
that,
Ace. You could ask Ace.
Wow.
Ask Ace. And then you'll see that I'm totally speaking the truth.
That's ridiculous.
We had Stephen Thompson and Michael Barbiero mixing that record. Hmm. And it was, oh. And all of a sudden, it got taken to L.A. They added the cover song on it. And then the band got left out, and he did some guitar instrumental video with other guys from that Camp Freddy cover band in L.A. And, like, the manager kind of just fucked everything up. You
wow.
know?
Sounds like it. Dang.
Well, I don't think that guy's working with him anymore, thankfully.
He's not.
Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah.
He didn't last very long. But he ruined a great record
in
the process. So.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
What's your favorite song off that album?
Pain in the Neck.
Yeah, that's a good
one.
Good heart.
I like half the record, I think, is killer.
Mm-hmm.
I love Skells, which is now Space Bear, the instrumental.
Yeah.
I love Pain in the Neck. I love, Foxy and Free, when it was hard for me, was great. Genghis Khan is a great song. Like, there's really good songs on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Half of it, I think. Like, I told them, I'm like, you're Ace fucking Frehley. You're a guitar god. They want to hear more Parasites, you know? They want to hear that ripping 70s guitar lick that made you Ace Frehley, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that says a lot for you, too, because I think a lot of guys in that situation be like, yeah, I'll put my stamp all over this album, but your ego is in charge.
You know how much money I lost in publishing?
Yeah, I suppose.
My first show I ever saw was Kiss at Madison Square Garden.
Nice.
And, like, you know, I know what Kiss fans want to hear, because I was one, you know?
Right. Well,
takes one to know one.
Let me go back to this. How do you lose your job over a case of beer? That's confusing.
Well, I was tour managing, and I was like 17 years sober when I met Ace, and then all of a sudden I had a midlife crisis and started dating a young girl and started drinking again. But you know, I quit, I don't know, when I was 27, and I was like in my 50s when I started drinking again. So it was a totally different head and all that, and I wasn't a bumbling idiot or whatever, but I did start to drink again. And I just thought it was kind of like, I was tour managing, stage managing, doing the merch, putting the band together, so I guess I was a musical director. I wore a lot of hats when I was with Ace, not just playing bass, and co-producing and stuff like that. So I think, like, we didn't have any beer and on the rider. And it was like, so after the show, all the guys in the crew that worked all day would have to go out into the concession stand and buy fucking beer. It's $7 a cup, you know? And I'm like, that's not cool. Yeah. I'm like, Ace was leaving right after the last note of the show. He would leave the venue, go back to the hotel, and he was flying to the gigs. And the band and the crew and everybody was on a bus. So we got used to get pizzas during loadout on the bus. So I was like, okay, let me throw a case of beer with the pizzas on the bus. Ace isn't going to be around the bus anyway. He'll never see the beer, so there's no temptation or whatever, which, is, I mean, he's around beer all the time. It's not like it's a temptation. So I didn't think it was a big deal. He was trying to get back into Kiss and thought if Gene and Paul saw a case of beer on the rider, that they would think that he was drinking again and he would lose out on being part of the farewell tour.
Wait, so
I got fired. So I was like, dude, I understand. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. I should have asked. It's totally my bad. I should have asked before I put it on the rider. It's my fault.
Yeah.
But I mean, I got fired over it. And I'm like, dude, like all the shit I do, you don't even give me like a warning, you know, slap on the wrist kind of thing. It's a fucking case of beer.
Right. So he was trying to get back in Kiss, but even back then?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's like 2012, I think, 13.
2009 or 10, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, but I played with him longer than
that.
Oh,
yeah. Also, I think,
I think this was the very end of it. So yeah. It was probably 2013.
Oh, okay. So, but he was worried that Paul and Gene were going to see what was on his rider?
I suppose, because
yeah, that's what he told me. That's what he told me, and that was the reason why I got canned.
Wow, I didn't realize that he would even be showing them his. I guess, well, it does make sense though.
But somebody could get a hold of it.
And I mean, you know, like I was, penny went missing. I was completely anal with Excel files on the merch every night, and after I was done gigging and, you know, count out them, then I'd go count the merch and make sure the money was right and all the merch was. I did so much shit, and it's like, really? You're going to fire me over a fucking case of beer? Like, come on, man. He had to have other reasons. I can't buy that.
Right.
But whatever. Mm. You know, whatever it is, what it is, you know?
Yeah.
But when I was involved, you know, Ace had a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had walk-on music and, like, you know, backline with blue mirrored plexi on it and backdrops and lighting and all this. Like, we put on a show. It wasn't like showing up with rented gear and just banging out the songs and leaving, you know? Like, it was a show, you know? We would wear the flight suits or, you know, with the lightning bolts on them. And, yeah, you know, it was like, it was a production, you know,
yeah.
Which Kiss fans want that, you know, like Kiss is the greatest show on earth. And it's like, you know, that doesn't work for an ex-Kiss member.
Right.
So did you have a hand in putting that band together with Ace?
Yeah, I put the whole band together.
Where did you guys find Derek Hawkins? Because that was really the first time I'd ever heard
of him. I know Derek forever in New York, and Derek was in Closer. And then Derek and I were in this band called the New Pop Jet together with two of the guys from Sponge. And I knew he was a great guitar player. He had never played in a rock band like that or anything like that before, but I knew he would be a good fit and a good team player and would love to be part of it. But originally I got Coogan because I knew Coogan because Coogan played in this phenomenal band called Violet's Demise, which Oni had after Oni left or got fired or however you want to know the story or whatever. From Lynch Mob, Oni had a band with Rowan called Violet's Demise, and we made this incredible record that Atlantic never released. And the record is fucking phenomenal. It's one of my favorite records of all time. And Coogan played drums on Violet's Demise. And then he started to play with Brides of Destruction,
right.
And I knew he could sing. So I was like, okay, if we get Coogan to play drums, we could start doing songs like Love Gun and stuff that Paul sings live, you know. Mm-hmm. I was like, the most drummers can play Kiss songs, you know. It's not like rocket science. They're not Rush songs, you know. I'm like, the gig is, can you sing like Paul Stanley? Because that's going to add to our options for a set list, you know. And then we do Love Gun and Strutter, and we're adding all these other songs that weren't in Ace's regular live show, you know, because the drummer could sing Paul parts. And then so I was like, okay, I got Coogan. And then the other original guitar player I had was Jason Hook, who was playing with, at the time, Alice Cooper. Now he's in Five Finger Death Punch. Right. And he wanted to do it so bad. But the we went in to do the record. We did rehearsals, and then we were going to do the Anomaly record, and Ace was going to play all the guitars, and Jason couldn't just sit and wait until the record was done to tour. So Jason went out with Alice Cooper, and we needed to find another guitar player, and that was when I arranged auditions for like 6 or 7 guitar players. Derek was one of them, and Ace picked Derek.
Ace Frehley's always got a great band around him, and that lineup's no different. I really, that's a damn good lineup he had.
And then we had Todd Youth, who played with like the Cro-Mags and Murphy's Law. And he was a New York hardcore punker, you know. He was another good guitar player.
Yeah, that's cool.
You had so much that Ace put on you that you did in that band. How did you even come across Ace and get that gig?
I knew a Hell's Angel in New York, and he was like, you need to meet Ace, and Ace needs to meet you, and he arranged it. I went up to Ace's house, and we just jammed a little bit and sat around and bullshitted and talked and stuff. And his friend played drums, who was a truck driver. And I'm like, great, my audition for Ace is I'm playing drums with this guy who's a truck driver. And I'm playing through like some, I think it was an orange or a red Marshall head. And it was a 412 cab. And I'm like, what is this amp? It's not a bass amp. It's a guitar amp, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah, Poppy, it's the guitar amp I used on the Destroyer tour. I'm like, okay. So I'm playing my 2 days through this half-stack Marshall from the Destroyer tour, playing with this drummer guy who doesn't know the songs. And I was like, oh, great. This is going to go well. This is a good audition. But we hit it off. We became friends. I mean, we were friends. You know, we used to hang out together and go to the Yankee games and ride our Harleys to Yankee games, and we hung out. It was good. It was a good time. He was a good friend to me and at the time. And
had he sobered up by that point?
Yeah, he was just starting. Like when I first met him, he was still drinking. Yeah. And then probably like 2 months in after I first met him, he had committed to not drinking anymore.
Well, that's good.
I was like, hey, can we go out? Like, you know, can you do like Ace Frehley Red Dragon Cartel Run tour? You know, it's like
that'd be cool.
70s guitar god with an 80s guitar god kind of thing. And like, it'll be fun. And Ace was like, nope, no thanks. I was like, okay. So I guess he doesn't want us opening some.
Yeah. Well, but it was cool when you came on board with Red Dragon Cartel. Cause like, I mean, as you well know, that band had a lot of turnover. It seemed like once the album came out.
It really didn't, though. I hate when people say that.
Oh, sorry.
Like, how does Lynch Mob get a pass? Like, they've had everybody in the world played in Lynch Mob, and you never hear about that.
Well,
like,
that's true.
Like, basically, there was the original lineup was Jonas, Darren, and Ron playing bass, and Jake, right? Mm-hmm. Ron was not a bass player, and that relationship soured. So Greg came in as a filler, so Jake could honor dates, but Greg had a job and a family, and he supposedly didn't want to tour, and then I came in. So that was just, you know, a placemat kind of thing, I guess. I don't know. And then as far as the drummer goes, we just had Jonas, and then for the new record, we got Phil because the band and the sound was going towards a different direction. Mm-hmm. And then Darren was in the band, and Jake and Darren had sort of had this falling out over something, and they parted ways. And Jake, the original booking agent, had booked all these dates that Jake physically is, I mean, you have no idea what he goes through to put on a show. His back is horrible, and his wrist. And like for hours before the show, he's stretching his back. He's got a back roller. He's lying on the tour bus trying to stretch his back out, and then he puts more KT tape on his body before a show than like the King Tut mummy, you know, like it's crazy. So they were booking 7 shows in a row on that first Red Dragon run before I was involved. And Jake's like, I can't physically do these dates. Can you please reschedule? I told you I can only do 3 in a row. Then I need a day off. Then 2 in a row and I need a day off. 5 shows a week is fine, you know? Mm-hmm. So they were booking 7s in a row. And he was like, I can't do it. And then he's like, please cancel them now because it's going to make me look bad if I can't physically do these. So they were like, oh, let's wait till we get to the dates. And he's like, no, cancel them now so nobody's right. pissed off and reschedule them. And they waited, and the shows got canceled. So when I joined in that March, the whole summer was making up shows that got canceled because of Jake's back and wrists, you know? Mm. So we didn't have a singer because Darren and him had the falling out. Right. So he was like, okay, let's audition these singers live, and we can honor these shows, and we could see these singers, instead of like just showing up for 2 hours and singing, they could actually come on the road and sing and be on the bus with us, and we could actually see if they get along with us and all that. So we gave like these singers like 6 shows to show us what they got, you know?
Wow.
And some had more shows than others, and we would go on runs with them. But none of them were ever in the band. We've only had 1 singer, technically.
Right. But that must have been like a pressure cooker, though, dealing with that. I mean, you're auditioning guys live. That's got to be difficult.
They Metal Sludge, they called it Red Dragon Carousel, which we loved. I mean, we were laughing on the bus when we read that. That was awesome. But no, I mean, you know, they had their thing, and it was like we would rehearse, you know, did 3 rehearsals or 2 or 3 rehearsals with them, just to make sure that they knew, you know, the songs and the arrangements and stuff like that, and then we'd go out and do 8-10 shows with them and whatever it was, and then stop, and then have another guy come out and do the next run and go through a couple rehearsals with him. And, you know, they all had time to prepare, and they knew the set list months before, you know.
Right. Okay.
That's a wild situation. You don't hear about that.
Well, I mean, to the outside world, as a music fan, it was like, wow, they have a different guy this week and another guy the next week. And
I mean, but come on, let's be honest. Like, 99% of the people that are coming to see us play are coming to see Jakey D.
Well,
they don't
sure,
really
totally.
Care about who's yeah. in the band.
Well, I personally...
They're not coming to see me, that's for sure.
Well, I did.
But it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of, like, it's Jake's.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like we're Led Zeppelin replacing Robert Plant.
Right. Well, I will say I was bummed that Darren wasn't singing the night I saw you guys. The guy that you had was good, but I think Darren has a really unique voice, and it's like, but I loved his voice on that first record, and I like it on Patina also. But it was there's a lot of bands where you could interchange a lot of singers for certain bands, but he actually had a really identifiable voice, which I was really impressed with. And to get into the Patina record a little bit, you ended up making that at your own studio, right?
Yeah, on the ranch for 1.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we took our time. We wrote it on the ranch in the studio, and then we recorded it, and then we sent it to Max to mix it, you know?
Well, what was the experience like working with Jakey Lee on a record?
It was great. I have nothing but the utmost. I respected him going into the process, and I respected him more coming out of the process, because like I learned so much working with him. He just hears things that I don't hear. Like he's so musically talented that he's so deep in his vision and his perception of music that he's actually hearing it deeper than most people. And his approach is great. Like I learned so much working with him, you know, which at this point in my career is a blessing, you know, that I get to work with somebody that good, that he stretches me and makes me better, you know?
Right. Let me go back to another listener question. What were your thoughts on the last tour? Cause the guy said, especially after the first show in Reno, I was at that show, and it seemed like everyone was having fun, but then the bus breaks down on your way to the second show in the middle of the desert, and then Phil says he's quitting drumming in a couple of weeks. into the tour.
Uh huh. Well, what do you want me to address on that? That was a multi-part question.
Well, I guess overall, I mean, what was your takeaway from that tour?
What went wrong in Reno?
Yeah.
Well, the bus broke down, which, I mean, they're pieces of machinery just like anything else, and didn't break our spirit any. We had to cancel one show, but it wasn't our fault. We were sitting on the side of the road in the middle of the Mojave Desert with outside of a meth head. It was like Breaking Bad kind of town, and it was not safe, but we got through it, and that didn't break our spirit. We laughed about it, you know, a couple of days after it. And I thought the band played really well. I thought the tour was way too short. I think, you know, we made a record, took us a year and a half, and then we toured for a month on it, which I would have preferred it to have been the other way around. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of places that we didn't play, and we were really a good live band, and a lot of people didn't get a chance to see it. Phil, there was the biggest surprise to us, sudden, that we hear he's retiring. I thought it was bad timing. It took some of the focus and distracted away from Patina that we were working on, that we were out there to promote that record. And then all of a sudden, some of the focus gets shifted on Phil retiring. So I thought it was not a very professional thing to do, to announce it during that tour or whatever. And, but it's his life and it's his situation to create.
Here's a good question right here. Got sent in by Michael Edmonds. He says, Anthony, you played with a bunch of great guitar players, but who do you think brings out your best in bass playing out of all of them?
Jake, hands down, without a doubt, Jake. With George, it's kind of like you're just providing a foundation for George to do what he does over. With Ace, it's always been keep it simple, you know, with Ace. Mm-hmm. But with Jake is so musical and so creative that it gives you spots to be creative and to stretch and do things that you have. Like, I have never been in a situation where I could do, I obviously could play those things, but I was never in a situation where it was called on for me to play those things. Jake, by far, is my favorite guitar player to play with.
That's cool, yeah. Michael says he agrees with you. He thinks you add so much to the groove, and I got to agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I kind of like to think that I do that with everybody. Like with Lynch Mob, we ruled in that mid-tempo sexual pump. Like you listen to Wicked and it's all like grindy and we used to call it Moroccan and roll. It's got like a little Bo Diddley bounce to it. And it was very sexual and like borderline Middle Eastern at parts. So with George, it was more of a right hand concentration. And with Jake, it's pretty much both right and left. I get to be more melodic and musical.
That's cool. That's good for the artist in you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would always back out. I would always ask him, whenever we were writing, we wrote the record live in the room, and it was Jake, myself, and a drummer, and we would just jam, and Jake would always come up with a part. It all begins and ends with Jake, and I would go, well, what are you hearing against this? You know, like what... Do you want me to drive it? Do you want me to move on it? Do you want me to play like halftime behind the beat? Like what are you hearing? What are you envisioning to support what you're doing? And then we would actually talk through it and work through options and try different drum beats. And it was such a great process to be able to do that with somebody that talented. You're obviously going to learn, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned that you worked hard and long on the album, and then the tour was so short. Why do you think the tour was so brief?
I don't know. It's not a band, so I don't have any say or anything. So I'm just a hired gun. So I don't know. That's a question that would be for Jake to answer.
Right.
But there's nothing more that I'd rather do right now than tour.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure Jake's like is had it with me with my texts pretty much weekly. Like, what's going on? Yeah. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? When are we going out again? What are we doing? You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, and half the time it doesn't even reply to me, you know, so such a great record and it really comes across great live and the people that saw us do it live will be the first one to say that it definitely transferred well to the stage, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking at a lot of these questions that got put into us to ask you. And I mean, it's over and over and over again, you know, when are you guys going back out? When are you guys going back out? So, Anthony, you're not the only one wondering what Jake wants to do. I mean,
I want, you know, and my whole thing would be, all right, let's do another video. Like we were talking about doing a video for the song Ink and Water because it's so cool and unique and tells a great story. And I was like, let's do another video, get momentum back, and try to get on a tour opening for somebody. Like, let's open for somebody big, like try to get us on an AC/DC tour, an Aerosmith tour or something like that, where we could go out and play to other people's fans and expose the band and grow the base, rather than just playing to the people that are already have the CD and already know about it, you know? Most people don't even know that Jake's playing anymore.
Yeah, rock and roll is just not what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It is, though. It's just at a weird stage right now.
Yeah, it's harder to find.
Well, is there anything aside from Red Dragon Cartel that you're currently working on?
Oh, I'm always producing. Did a band called Rider that's really good. I'm doing another band called the War Brothers that are ironically four brothers, two sets of twins, 2 years apart. And they're out of Connecticut, and they're like early Van Halen kind of guitar players, great. And we're working on songs with them now. And then I'm working on another thing that's almost more psychedelic furs-ish. And then there's also a band called Dogs of Reason that's very in that Skinner, Allman, Black Crows kind of vibe. But I'm always producing bands. I love producing bands. And I love green new bands. Like, I love working with them and helping them understand their potential, you know, and how to think about things and to arrangements. And I really, any day spent in the studio is a good day for me, you know.
Nice. Well, keep us updated on that stuff because we're
Red Dragon. I mean, we need to tour more, and that's the thing. It's just a big issue with me, and I really, really want to go out and I really want to play. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know why we're sitting at home and everybody else is touring.
It's too good of a band with too many good songs to let just fade away like that.
Yeah, you know what the one thing too that's bad about Red Dragon? I think, like I told when Jake renegotiated his recording contract, I told him, I'm like, now's a really great time for you to put the Red Dragon Cartel to rest and just call it Jakey Lee. I go, because Jakey Lee has much more marquee value to a promoter than Red Dragon Cartel does.
That's true.
So it's like, we're a new band, Red Dragon Cartel. It's not like Lynch Mob or Enough's Enough or Rat, or that you put Rat up on a marquee, the promoters are going to pay that money because they know people are going to see Rat, know Rat, and go see Rat. People have to dig and find Red Dragon and then figure out, oh, it's Jakey Lee's Red Dragon Cartel. And I thought, we're a new band with a new name, so that when you play like festivals like M3 or Rocklahoma or whatever, you know, Dokken will get headliner, even though it's one guy original. Whereas, you know, we're at 1 o'clock on the B stage because we're Red Dragon Cartel. But if we're Jakey Lee, we probably would get main stage, you know? Like, it's a weird situation that we don't have the X marquee name. So are we an old band playing old hits, or are we a new band playing new hits? And should we be going out with newer bands, like opening for Greta Von Fleet or Rival Sons or somebody like that, because we're a new band? We're kind of on this fence, and it doesn't seem to benefit us on either side of the fence.
Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah, I can see how that's possible, because like you said, you know, Jakey Lee, that's a you know, in the world of rock, you know, that's a household name.
Yeah.
You know, legendary.
I mean, and I thought that would have done better for the whole thing if he was Jakey Lee, and the promoters probably would have paid more for the live shows for the band. And because I think Jakey Lee on the marquee is a better sell than Red Dragon Cartel. Nobody really knows who Red Dragon Cartel is.
Right.
Wow. And again, Anthony, I think this really speaks to how your ego is in check. I mean, because most bass players would be like, no, I want to be, it's got to be the band. But you're cool enough to go, you know, honestly, it should be your name up there, and I'm just happy to be here. That's pretty cool.
It's Jake's band. Right. I'm just, I'm happy that he lets me be part of it, you know, and be part of the creative. Like, I wrote all the lyrics and the melodies on the record. I get to be part of the creative process and part of his vision and help him create what's in his brain, what he's hearing, help it, like, materialize on a CD, you know. Like, I love that I'm part, and I'm blessed that I'm part of that, you know. But it is his deal, you know. If I went out solo, nobody would come. You know,
me and Chris would be there.
Yeah, we would come.
We'd be there.
Well, thanks, guys.
Oh, man. Well,
but you know what I mean, right? I mean,
sure.
It's like, you know, the best, whatever's best for Jake is good for me. You know?
Yeah,
right.
Well, I hope you guys can get back out on the road, because I know there's a lot of people that would want to see you guys.
Yeah, I mean,
I so want to. I loved playing that run, and I was sick as a dog that whole run. And I still loved it. It was so much fun playing those songs and being around the guys. And you know, like, we're big hockey fans. We have, like, center ice package on the tour bus. We watch hockey all the time. And, like, it's like, you know, you're with your bros and you're hanging out and you're going town to town and playing shows and of music that you created together. I mean, what's better than that, you know?
Yeah.
Right on. We're talking to you, Jakey Lee. Red Dragon Cartel's too good. Anyway,
he knows, trust me. He's so sick of it. Like, I didn't even bring it up. He got married like a couple weeks ago. We went out to Vegas, we went to his wedding, and I didn't even bring it up because I know he knows what I feel, how I feel about it, and I don't need to say it anymore. You know.
Yeah.
If anybody has any objections, please stand up. Well, this ain't really an objection. It's just more of a question. Jake, when are we going back on tour?
I'm sure he's getting it just as much as I am.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm still thankful that he came back into the public eye to start with, because he was basically like a mystery for so many years. You know, it was awesome to see him come back out with such great product, too. I loved hearing him play again. And when I went to that show in Nashville and they had the white Charvel right there on stage, and I was like, wow, that's the guitar.
Yeah.
And just,
yeah. I think also it would have been better if Patina was the first CD for his return, rather than the thing with all the different singers on it and stuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if Patina would have came out after he hadn't done anything in 15-some-odd years, I think it would have done well, you know?
Yeah, and
the first one definitely should have just been called Jakey Lee because of all the different contributors to it.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I
love that song with Robin Zander on there.
Yeah, that Feeder.
That's
a
mind blower.
Yeah, we closed the set with that.
That's a great
our closer.
Well, and I read in an interview with you that you absolutely love the word patina.
No, we were making the record, and we were, like, watching all the DIY network and, all the home builders that are redoing, barnwood builders. And every other word out of their mouth on those shows is patina this, patina that, patina this. And it was like, I kept saying, I hate that word. All they keep doing is saying this stupid word over and over and over. If I hear the word patina again. And then we went out to the local bar. It was this place called Flapjacks, and it was like locals only bar. And we would go after we practiced, and we'd go and just have a few drinks. And Jake, we were drunk. It was late in the night, and Jake's like, I think I got a name for the CD. And I was like, really, really? He's like, you're not going to like it. And I was like, like, really? Like, why? And he goes, well, just have an open mind when I tell it to you. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, what about patina? I was like, that fucking word. and then he goes, no, think about it. Like, in the way our careers are and our musical development. And then, like, we're not 20-year-olds anymore. And we've acquired this patina to our skill and our tone and our outlooks, you know. And I was like, you know, putting it that way, it is a great name.
Yeah, because it's like a aged oxidation process that you see on furniture and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and then the brainstorming go, oh, you should have a patina guitar, and then, you know, then everything starts taking off.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, we could do all the band photos at the I have a pre-Civil War barn, and mm-hmm. you know, that's where we shot the Speed Bag video and the Havana video in my barn. And all the photos on the CD are all around the ranch because everything's got patina. Because, I mean, the house was like, you know, the properties and the house and the barn and the studios, everything is like mid 1800s, you know. Mm-hmm. So everything's got patina on it. But yeah, there's that word.
So thank you, DIY Network, for an album title.
Exactly, right. Yeah, totally.
That's awesome.
Who would ever guess that?
Oh, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun getting to talk to you and get your take on all this stuff.
Anytime, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
And keep us up to date on what you're working on. Let us know if you want to come back on and promote anything. And we always give our guests the option of doing a playout song. So any song from your career that you want us to spin, what would you want us to play?
Havana.
All right. Nice. Havana off Patina.
I'm like the biggest Philadelphia Flyer fan. Like, I don't know if you guys watch hockey or not, but I'm like Flyers. Like, I got hooked on them when they were the Broad Street Bullies in the 70s, and I never turned back. I was like, so now I live in Pennsylvania. It's nice to have fellow Flyer fans around, because I grew up in like Ranger Central and Islander Central, you know, in New York. But we actually contacted the Flyers and tried to get Havana and Speedbag played at their home games when they score goals and stuff, and we're waiting to hear back from the team. It would just be awesome if they played, you know, Havana or Speedbag when they were going on the ice or after a goal or whatever, you know. Havana, I loved that song from the first time that Jake played that riff. I just was immediately like, that song kills, you know.
Nice. Well, Anthony, this has been awesome hanging out with you today. You know, thanks for the update on everything going on with Red Dragon Cartel and, you know, just telling us some cool, awesome stories, man. We'd love to have you on again sometime.
And thank you for having me on and helping me promote Patina and getting the word out. Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.